Thank you, Mr. Offer Mace.
Yeah, sure. You know, it depends on what the guy did yesterday. Which, question was, good morning, that we took yesterday. I don't want to go into it yesterday because it wasn't the purpose of the shiur yesterday. It wasn't philosophy. It was really a halachic philosophy. It was on the Gemara in Kedushin. So Gemara Kedushin says that the person who is a tzaddik, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, pays him back in the next world. But he gives him a very bad time in this world. That's what Rashi learns. Rabbeinu Tam doesn't learn that way. So Rashi learns that they give him a bad life. They give him a bad life in order that he should have Olam Haba. Rashi learns that way. And a person who's in Russia, they give him a good life here so that God pays him back over here. So then he doesn't have to pay him back in the next world. So Gerstein asked a good question. Gerstein said, what kind of a trade-off is this? I mean, if the real world is supposedly the next world, right? Now, how could you pay a guy back? It's like paying a guy back. It's not like paying a guy back in quarters when you're supposed to be paying him in dollars. It's a qualitatively differentiated thing. It's like you're paying him back in something which is which you can't even compare, right? Everybody knows the Chazal, right? Famous Chazal. That Kadosh Baruch Hu pays him back. Maybe get me a Gemara Kedushin. So this is watching over there. Really Roy? Well, we can ask the question another way.
Yeah.
Say, if the rush is really Roy, follow our bar.
What does the Gemara mean?
So why should God...
Why is that?
Yeah. No, that's the tzaddik. They give him a bad life. Ba'olam HaZeh, in this world, Linakoso, in order to purify him, Evanoso, Shito Sar Shalem, he should be able to take complete Sar. And Mekifin Lo is going under Russia, they do good for him. Lishalem Lo Sar Mitzvoso, Bechayav. To pay him back the Sar for his mitzvahs and during his lifetime. To do the Tordo, in order to take him away from the next world. Remove him from the next world. Yeah. By the way, the Tosafot says Rabbeinu Tam doesn't learn that way. Rabbeinu Tam, so the situation is really not as bleak. According to Rashi, it's a very bleak situation for tzaddik. According to, not really bleak, I mean, it's bleak in terms of Olam HaZeh. But according to Rabbeinu Tam learns that they give him a bad day or two, a couple of bad days, but basically he has a good life. This is, it depends, if you learn Rabbi Yaakov or not. If you say, it's time mitzvah by Alma Lekka, it's time mitzvah by Alma Ika. That's what the Machlokes depends upon. Ram is concerned, it's time mitzvah by Alma Lekka, right? Thomas Lamb on the record. That's the Machlokes. With regard to whether you can get paid back in terms of this life or not. Does this life matter or not? Okay. A person has a good time in this life. Is that a form of payment? Does God make sure that a person has a good time in this life, or God doesn't care whether he has a good time in this life or not? There's nothing. This life is worthless. The only thing is this life in terms of the future. But this life per se, there's no such thing as a schar. That's Machlokes Rabbi Yaakov and the other Chachamim. Well, things, not in terms of the Olam Haba. Like, let's say, for instance, I mentioned this yesterday. Let's say, for instance, a person's not going to be learning from 2 to 5. Right? He's not going to learn anyways. But he could be enjoying himself, or he could be in pain. And whether he enjoys himself or whether he's in pain does not affect him in the after 5. See? So that's Machlokes Rabbi Yaakov and Chachamim. Does God really care whether he enjoyed himself during those 3 hours? Or it doesn't make any difference anyways, because Chayyar Olam HaZeh, it doesn't matter. That's not like a form of Yaakov. Yaakov says, Chaymas Bayam Alecha, it means it doesn't make any difference. What's the difference? If he was in pain and it prevented him from learning, that everybody learns that makes a difference. Because then you're talking about Olam Haba. See? But if it didn't make any difference, you see, it's Gemara Yad and Brachas too. Gemara says that if a person will eventually have to answer to God for every fruit that he passed by that he didn't eat. Every I know in this world that he didn't take. Funny Gemara. So I have to answer. See that you can't satisfy God's ways. Will you become an ascetic? You'll satisfy him? No. I'll give you an answer for that too. Whatever you do, it's not good. So the Pshat says, that's what the Pshat. The Pshat is insofar as he needs it, insofar as he needs it. So then, you could say the basic chat is the reason why God gives him punishment for not partaking of the fruit is because it was something which was necessary for him to help him learn better. Well, I say learn better, to help him improve himself. So then, so far as it's necessary to remove him to purify his soul, the Nakosa. And if he's on tremendous madriga, so then he might not have to suffer at all, or very little.
So then this is
not all. So far, the Gemara is not speaking about the pain of the inability to do mitzvahs, because that's already taken away from the ability to do mitzvahs. That's what the Gemara says in the contrary. The trick of it says that a person who does mitzvahs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps him to do mitzvahs. Yeah. So the thing is, he must say that the chat is so far as the pain, the pleasure and pain in this world. Now you tell me, but you can't give a real schar to a philosopher, because he really doesn't care about the physical. You may be right, but there's such a thing as pain. Pain that doesn't exist. Now you can't say that doesn't exist. You have a very painful existence. A person has certain basic needs. He has certain basic needs in terms of food and water. A person doesn't have any water to drink. He'd be a big philosopher, but he's still thirsty. Still in pain. Still in pain. Bad disease. Every time he wants to move, he's in pain. I mean, you can't say that... I have to say, in terms of his perfection, it will not affect him. But he will have a painful existence. From his perfection, and then that's not then you're going to then it's going to be against the whole purpose. The whole purpose of him having an Einish is that he should reach perfection, no longer bore, right? And if you're going to take away from him his perfection, then it's the opposite thing. In other words, if God's going to take away his perfection, you understand? So then it's the opposite of the whole purpose. The whole purpose of him suffering in this world is that I should get all of my bore. Now you're going to tell me he takes away his perfection, then it's impossible. So in terms of his perfection, you must say that it doesn't detract from his perfection.
But you must say that...
So you give him good in this world to offset what he's supposed to get in the next world. Has a good part to him when he starts off, right? There's a good part. There's an element in him which is attached to the eternal, right? And then there's an element in him which is vicious. Right? It's all right. Now, insofar as a person perfects himself, so then he is removed from the evil element. But the evil element still exists, to a certain extent. Right? So, now the evil element desires the physical. Right? Now, so God removes the physical from him in order that he should, shouldn't be corrupted by the physical. Because any performance action which is evil has to have an evil effect on the doer, right? Okay, so therefore God removes the physical from him in order that he should be in the world of the good, right? And for the Rosh, it works the opposite way. That since he desires evil, right? So God makes sure that he gets that which is evil. So that the other side of his nature doesn't get a chance to express itself. Right? That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a possibility. What do you think? What do you say, why? Yeah, good, because the reason is because God acts with each person in accordance with what he desires. God assists the individual, as a matter of fact, it's a chazal, but they'll show them right to Lelach Malik Nasai. If the way a person wants to go, that's the way they carry him. So the person wants to go and wants to live in the world of the good, so then God arranges the phenomena so that he should be able to do it. That's right, because insofar as a certain part of his nature hasn't really been corrupted, he's not totally corrupted, right? He wants to. When a person wants evil, then that's a corruption of the soul, right? But when a person attains evil, the soul is further corrupted. Didn't you say?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Ah. So therefore, the corruption of his soul is incomplete. Right?
True.
So God makes sure that the corruption is complete. That he doesn't say that he doesn't have the benefits of the eternal, of next world.
That
doesn't mean that God gives a person a reward. And that went through. Right. But it doesn't really mean literally that God pays him back for what he did. I mean, you're not doing God a favor. I mean, I'm doing God a favor now. I'm working hard for him so that God's going to pay me back. It's my own benefit. It's a natural result. All of us natural result. If the soul's in a certain state, so then it can exist in all of us. If the soul is interested, all of us a place where the activities are activities of the soul. Right? Now, if a person has reached a certain level, so then those activities that he is involved in, he can keep on doing, because those are the activities that are eternal. But if he's not involved in those activities, then he has no place in all of us, simply because he has no relationship to it. Yeah.
What controls when you're ready for all of
my mind? What controls the soul? You want to know in general, is the mind controlling the soul, or is the
soul controlling the mind?
One second. So then what is soul? Are you saying soul is something other than mind?
It's infiltration of soul.
Right?
What are we talking about?
Or is emotions in control of him? Both are in control.
Which one?
Okay. Which one? Control of an individual, or is the, or are the emotions in control?
And how does that apply to what we do?
What's in control of oppression? Are his emotions in control, or is mind?
Control.
Right?
Right.
Ask the question. What do you think? Guy. Yeah. Hey, person, one person is in control. All right? But the imperfected soul is the one whose emotions are in control.
Yes.
Right? So the purpose of this life is that the person should be able to live a life in which his mind is in control. Right? Okay. But there are people who don't attain that level.
Yeah, well, there's
right?
degrees.
There's degrees in how much? And how much? Okay. So the question is, however, like this. When a person first starts, what's in control?
Emotions.
Mm-hmm. Emotions are in control. But then how does it become perfected?
Right.
Basic argument there.
Yeah,
right. You're saying it's not the emotions. You're saying the soul is the intellect.
Right.
He's saying the soul is the emotions.
Rabbi, can I ask you a question?
Yeah. Question?
Yeah.
Question was, what's the essence of man? Is the essence of man emotions, or is the essence of man his intellect? Right? Okay. Now, really maintains the essence of man is his emotions, right? And that's what dictates everything that he does in his life. Whatever he does. Of course, he uses the intellect, but the driving force is the emotions, right? Okay. Based upon that, if we say that the essence of man is his emotions, right? So then you have to say that Olam Haba relates to the essence of man. It would seem natural to follow that the Olam Haba relates to the essence of man. And therefore, his emotions should enjoy themselves in Olam Haba. Right? Okay. Now. Right? Okay. It's like this. That Bruce mentioned also. Said that there's... That it's both. That sometimes a person emotionally feels a certain closeness to God, right? And some people feel to a greater degree. We agree with that. And some people feel it at certain times. And some people don't feel it all the time. Right? Okay. Some people don't feel it at all. Okay. All right. Now. Does one ask you like this? One more question I ask you. We say that there's emotions and intellect, and the emotions utilize the intellect, right? As a like, just like it utilizes the senses, it utilizes the intellect as a tool, right? Okay. But now let me ask you a question. When the emotions consult the intellect, right? And the intellect gives it feedback, correct? Okay. Now, does the feedback change the emotion, or the emotions remain the same? But the emotions will the emotions, in other words, will operate differently based on the feedback, but they won't be changed. Let me give you an example. A person, in the case of the wife.
Yeah.
Okay. The person has the person lost his wife and he longs for his wife. Now he has this desire to have his wife. Now she died. So the emotions consult the intellect and ask whether the wife is alive or not. Is she here in reality? The intellect says no, she's not here in reality. Now, what happens to the emotion is, the emotion over here will undergo a painful state of frustration, right? That's one possibility. In other words, the emotion remains the same. The emotion didn't change, but the only thing is that right now the satisfaction of that emotion becomes impossible. But the emotion essentially remains the same.
The wish.
He still wants her the same way, right? Mm-hmm. And the only thing is that he can't have her. Right? That's one possibility. Or are you saying that the emotions actually are changed by intellect? In other words, a person has a certain feeling of love for his wife. Now he finds out that she's dead, so therefore the emotion is gone. The emotion changes.
Based on the reality.
Does the emotion change? In other words, can intellect change emotions, or emotions really remain the same? But they deal based upon whatever intellectual information we have. So now the emotions will maneuver themselves differently. We'll have to try to find somebody else. He wants this love. He doesn't have it for this object. We'll have to wait a while until he gets over it, and then we'll try to find somebody else. You see? Or do we say that intellect really changes emotions? And if a person has more knowledge in different areas, then the emotion itself is going to become a different emotion. Let me put the question differently. A person, you have two people, an intelligent person and a person who isn't as intelligent. So naturally, the one who consults his intellect with a superior intelligence gets different information than a person who consults his intellect who has inferior intelligence, right? Okay. Does the person with superior intelligence have different emotions? Does the feedback from the intellect give a person different emotions? Or do they all have the same emotions? But the option is that the one who has more knowledge will act differently. His emotions will operate differently. But the point is, they both have the same emotions. Emotions don't change. Or do we say that intellect, an increase in intellect, changes the emotions? Which one of the two would you say? You understand my question?
Right.
Different emotions, totally different emotions that we don't experience. Does everybody experience the same emotions? But the only thing is that the more knowledge he gains, right? The more knowledge he gains, depending on what the knowledge is, his emotions will operate differently.
But they'll stay the same.
You know what I mean? But essentially, the emotions will stay the same. I'll give you another illustration. The person starts out, he's 13 years old, right? Start at 13. He doesn't have that much knowledge. Comes 25, he has more knowledge. Does he have different emotions now that he's 25? Or do we say now he has the same emotions? But the only thing is that the intellect now is capable of giving him more information, so of course he's not going to react the same way as a 13-year-old. The reason why he doesn't act like a 13-year-old is not because he has different emotions. He has the same emotions. But the only thing is that he has more information, so therefore his emotions will operate differently. Because the emotions consult the intellect to find out the information. So one individual has one feedback, the other individual has another feedback. The 13-year-old has one feedback, so he operates one way, and the 25-year-old has different feedback, so he operates differently.
Yep.
But essentially, they both have the same emotions.
Yep.
Which one of the two do you accept?
Same
thing.
Okay.
So everybody agrees with the second way.
Prove
the second way. All right, this is
second
a
way
question.
That it'll change
in emotion.
Yeah.
But the only thing is he has different feedback, right? Okay. Now he says. Another question is: can you prove the second way? That the emotions don't change.
Fundamentally, but that you
create new emotions.
No.
All right? Now, a lot of experiences, but the experiences are nothing more than utilizations of the old emotions with never come into resistance because you didn't have the situation.
Right.
You see? But the emotions were exactly the same. Or do we say no, that the intellect really creates new emotions? Okay? That's my question. He changes the scene so that his emotions attach themselves to different things. Right? Those two possibilities, right? Yeah. He's talking about, you're getting to the point, but the point is this, that in order to say that the intellect changes emotions, you would have to say that the intellect is a causative agent in the production of emotions. Correct? Right? Now, do we see anywhere? Do we see anywhere? Is there anything in our mind? Any relationship that we see where the intellect is a causative factor in emotions more than anything else in the world? I mean, that exists. Is there any reason in order to say that it's a causative? This way you're premising something. And if you say the first possibility, you're premising that intellect is a causative agent in the process of creating emotions, right? Now, if it's a causative agent, we have to see in what way is it a causative agent. Is there any way that we see, that we have any evidence that the intellect is a causative agent in emotions? That's it. And so far as we see, the emotions consult the eyes to see whether the thing exists. There's no more reason to say that the eyes are a cause of emotion than there is the intellect. Correct? So, insofar as we could see, there's no causal relationship between the intellect and between emotions. Correct? Now the question is, to prove that it's not a causal relationship, that would be just as impossible as trying to prove that anything. I could say that tree outside is a causative agent in my emotions. But since I don't see any relationship between the tree and between the emotions, there's no reason for us to assume it rationally, right? So therefore, there's no reason to assume that the intellect is in any way a causative agent in the production of emotions, right? Unless someone could show us a relationship in terms of causality, correct? So therefore, we should assume the second premise, namely that intellect does not cause emotions. That intellect is just a tool, just like the eye and the ear is the tool which the emotions use, right? And just like the eye and the ear are just as ineffective in production of emotions, so too the intellect is ineffective in production of emotions. Or at least we've never seen it being effective in production of emotions. We have to assume it's not, right? Okay. Of course, it's rational to assume that something is not a cause when we see no relationship between the two, right? No causal relationship. And since we see no causal relationship, so we must assume that way, correct? Okay. Okay, case. Then we have to say that knowledge really does not change emotions, right? We agree with that, correct? Okay. Now, I'm giving you something from Allah. I'm really addressing myself to Bruce's point, okay? The Ram says like this. The Ram says, hey, Yoch, there's a mitzvah of Avas Hashem, right? Avas Hashem, one of the biggest mitzvahs in the Torah, right? Okay. You saw the Torah. Okay. Now, the Rambam says, what is the derech that a person should use, must use, to love God? So the Rambam says like this. When a person, b'shosh yisbonin adam b'maisav b'ruv ha'nefloim ha'gedolim, when a person contemplates the actions and the creations of God that are astounding and that are great, and he sees from them God's knowledge, which has no boundary, it's infinite, right? So the Rambam says, "Miyadu olav mishabech mafor masava taiva gedola leida Hashem agadol." So then he's imbued with the tremendous desire to know God. That's love of God, right? Okay. Now, if you're going to say that knowledge in no way creates new emotions, right? So we said that different people have different emotions, right? And some people have emotions to a greater degree and some people have emotions to a lesser degree. Now, therefore, a person who has an emotion of Avas Hashem, right? A person has an emotion of Avas Hashem, so he would not need any knowledge. Because since the emotion exists, correct? So therefore, since the emotion exists, so he will naturally have this ava, right? The individual who has the knowledge has not really, through the knowledge, changed his emotion. He can only cause himself to utilize the emotion. Right? Okay. So therefore, they both really, the person who has knowledge, right, will have the same emotion as the person who doesn't have knowledge, right? Which would mean that a person could fulfill this mitzvah of Avas Hashem, of love of God, without knowledge, because he has the emotion, right? Granted, he could fulfill it through knowledge, but he could also fulfill it without knowledge. And a person without knowledge could fulfill the mitzvah to a greater degree than a person with knowledge.
Why is that?
Because If the person's naturally, we said, let's say a person naturally has this emotion, he has this feeling. Has this feeling of Avas Hashem.
Right?
Now, if he has this feeling of Avas Hashem, right? So, he will be able to fulfill this mitzvah just to just as great a degree as a person who has the knowledge. And even just as great a degree, and even to a greater degree than other people who have less knowledge than him.
Right.
Have more knowledge than him. Sorry, have more knowledge.
Why? Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because if he has more emotion, we said emotion is something which is a variable. Right? So one person has more emotion, another person has less emotion. So
why does knowledge affect that? Why does the fact that one person has more knowledge affect that?
No, so I'm saying it doesn't affect it. In spite of the fact that the other person has more knowledge, he might be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Avas Hashem to a greater degree.
He has more emotion.
Have more emotion. Because it's an emotion. The mitzvah of Avas Hashem to a greater degree.
He has
more emotion. Because it's an emotion. Right?
Yeah.
Right? He has a feeling. Right?
The knowledge is only to accomplish the emotion.
Right.
The guy has an emotion.
That's the only way that a person could have this mitzvah, could fulfill this mitzvah, is through knowledge. Now, if we're going to say that the essence of man is his emotion, so then we would have to say that the person who has less knowledge can fulfill the mitzvah in certain instances more than the person who has knowledge. But this, according to the Rambam, is an impossibility. Because according to the Rambam, there is a direct ratio between his knowledge and between his Avas Hashem. And a person who has less knowledge could never have more Avas Hashem than a person who has more knowledge. But according to the premise that the essence of man is emotions, so it'll turn out that the person who has more emotions, since that's the essential thing, will have a greater Avas Hashem than the person who doesn't. Unless you would argue that knowledge will give a person a different kind of emotion. But we've said before that knowledge does not give a person a different kind of emotion, right? So knowledge doesn't affect the emotions in terms of making a new emotion, right? So therefore, it will turn out that the Avas Hashem will be has nothing to do really with knowledge. But the Rambam says that it does. I just want to show you one thing: that if you're going to maintain that the essence of man is his emotions, then that would be against the Rambam. Now I'm not answering his question. I'm just showing you from the halachic sources. That's not really a fair answer to this question.
Because
his question really isn't answered. His question, I want you to think about to give an answer. Right. To logically show whether it's correct or not. But I'm just showing you from our halachic system that since you say there's a direct ratio between chachma and between Avas Hashem, you see, if you're going to say the essence of man is his emotion, so then it shouldn't make any difference really. Right? What do I care if one person has more knowledge than the other person? The knowledge isn't the thing. The important thing is this emotion. And the one who has the emotion is the one that should be the greater tzaddik in this instance.
So what's the essence
here?
The
problem
of the emotion?
Telling me that so the essence is the emotion. So we tend to show that the essence of man is his emotions. Another raya. Right? And yet if that's the case, then what do you need knowledge for? So it's another question. Right? If you were talking about a trip to get to God,
emotion that can
God, isn't that the mitzvah?
So why do you need why should the ratio should be based on intellect?
Yeah. Well, that's a simple thing. This is a very simple thing. It's an old question. Most people assume that a person is a firm person. Right? Firm person has a certain feeling towards God, right? So we'll say that this person is on a higher level than another person, that the essence is that feeling, right? So you're going to have to say that even though he has less knowledge, right, he's on a higher level and the guy has more knowledge and less of that feeling. Right? Okay? So this, right, that's essentially what we're saying here. Because you can't say the guy who has more knowledge has a different feeling, because then you're going to have to say that knowledge produces new feelings. But that we've shown is not true, right? Right? So therefore you must say that knowledge doesn't produce new feelings, and feelings are the same. So this guy has the same feeling as the other guy. So the guy with knowledge ultimately has the same feeling as this guy. Now this guy's using the feeling, this guy has more of the feeling. So he's on a higher level than the other guy, so what do you need knowledge for?
Okay.
You can't love God because you can't have the object of God unless you have a certain amount of knowledge. Right? Okay. But the point is this. That it's true that he has to have some knowledge. That's true. But the point is there should not be a ratio between his knowledge and his love.
I mean, once you have a certain amount of knowledge that you can...
Yeah, once he knows what it is, you're right.
Yeah, okay.
That should be it.
The more knowledge you gain...
I'm going to this is Rambam in Hilchos Teshuva Perek Asiri, the last halacha, halacha vav. Rambam says, "Al pi adeya ti ahava imat mat v'mharbe harbe."
No.
By time. Lahovin or Lahaskil. Lahovin or Lahaskil, to understand, have knowledge. Bechokmos utvunos hamadim lo eskono. He has to understand the chokmos and the tvunos, the knowledgeable areas that teach him about God. God. What is the Rambam referring to? The Rambam is referring to knowledge of physics. That's what the Rambam is referring to. Knowledge of the world. Knowledge of, because the Rambam says before, in Torah, Perek Beis. So the Rambam says that what is the way that a person loves Hashem? He says, he has to understand all the Chochmas of Bria. Chochmas of Bria. Unbelievable Rambam. Nobody keeps the list from either. Rambam said the person is in Yachad Zman to understand Chochmas of Bria.
Which Rambam was that?
Last Rambam of Chashuva.
Which was the one you
said at that? Sefer Mitzvah. You got the Rambam Sefer Mitzvah? Give me around Sefer Mitzvah. See that yourself. It's Mitzvah Gimel, Mitzvah Sek. V'zeh she'nachshov in his bonein b'mitzvosov u'ma'amorov u'pu'ulosov ad she'nashiguhu v'nene ba'asagoso b'tachlus ha'anoch. See what Rambam says? So the Rambam says, it's Mitzvah Gimel. Mitzvah Gimel. And Mitzvah Sek. Who has the other Rambam that you learned from Kapach in the Yeshiva? I think Yeshiva. Get in his bonein. This is interesting. Of his, a little bit different than the Rambam Yad HaChazak. It says, Shazavan, b'mitzvoysov u'maymorov. You see? U'pulloysov. Ad shenasi guhu v'nene b'hasagosa b'tachas ha'anoh. See, Rambam holds it. Ha'anoh of Chochmah. But over here he says also halacha too. It says, mitzvoysov u'maymorov. U'pulloysov. Both. What?
What?
Guhu v'nene b'hasagosa b'tachas ha'anoh. Tachas ha'anoh. I have tremendous enjoyment out of the appreciation of the Chochmah. The tachlis hanoah means it's the ultimate type of hanoah. The zosi ha'ava mechuyeves. The Rosh Hashanah, the fishnem of atos of the Shem Alkecha, any yedei aketzer ha'eves and makayim. So you just don't say Christianity accepted as the Islam is saying, no, really? No, the Gemara of the Chazal asked the Sefiyas, ketzer ha'eves and makayim. Tamar lehm vahe adzor ma'elah shenech mitzaf ha'yam al levavecha. Rashi says, shemitzach kacha ta makis mish yobo vahe'elam. Rashi also says, Rashi nechum, it's a says the only way you can have Avas Hashem. Take care of Avas Hashem, but Rashi doesn't come to learn. So then you can have Avas Hashem. But without knowledge, there's no Avas Hashem. It's Rashi Nachum Shvashchan. So over here, it's true that the Rambam over here says it's both. Mitzvah of my Marav Upulaisa. In the Yad HaChazakah, it stresses mainly the Pulaisa. It doesn't say, I guess because the Rambam of the Yad HaChazakah has also the maybe whatever it is. Why he didn't say mitzvah? I don't know. But it would seem simple. He has to say both. It has to be both, because the to see the chokhmas Hashem, what way? How do we relate to God? We only can relate to God in one way, because God's essence no man can know. Right? That's impossible for us to know. So the only way to relate to God is by his actions. His actions, things that he did. Results, but you have to see the results. The Rambam holds in all areas. You have to see his chachma in terms of his Torah, how he formulated the halachas. Chachmas Hashem. You see that. So you have an idea of yes. This is halacha, and my marav is pasuk chumash. They're not halacha and Tanakh. Different things. They're not halacha. It has to do with some my marav. You know what I mean? Divrei Musar, Divrei Chachma, you know what I mean? Mitzvah of Maimarav and Pulaisav. But the Rambam definitely holds that that a person has to have knowledge. The only way to have knowledge of God is through the results that we see. Okay? And that's only through understanding the Chachma. Okay. Knowledge leads to certain emotion. Right? So what is the essence? Is the essence of the knowledge? What is the emotion for? Right? If the essence is the emotion, so we said, and if the essence thing is an emotion, knowledge doesn't make a new emotion. Because everybody has this emotion. So let's say this guy, and this guy's caused by knowledge. And another guy will be caused by something else. You know what I mean? Another guy has a feeling that he loves God. He doesn't have the knowledge. Right? So why is it, if it's an emotional state, so why is the guy has the knowledge any better? This guy is better, he has more emotion. One guy has more knowledge, one guy has more emotion. It should balance out. And Rambam says, no, it's a direct ratio.
And
Right? Interesting, yeah? The Gemara says, I with Nashacha. But the Ram says, the Pshita Shalmikra is also there. You can't take away Pshita Shalmikra. And if it gets to the Pshita, B'chol Lev B'chol Nashacha means the guy is completely evolved, totally. And he says, yes, and he says, Lusha Shlomo Omar Derech Marshall, he said, I'm not on it. Derech Marshall means, the Marshall is a very good Marshall. The Marshall is, Kicholas Avani means like a person's in a love affair. He's involved in a love affair. All his emotions constantly, day and night, the guy's involved in it. The person's involved in it. That's the way he has to feel. That's the type of feeling it is. It means that all that energy that ordinarily is expressed in a mundane love affair, where all his energy is taken up, the guy's completely, that's all he can think about. That's all he's into. That's the way I have to feel by a person that reaches the level of Hashem. It's an unbelievable thing.
Because
the person really has a tremendous amount of psychic energy inside him. But under ordinary circumstances, it doesn't really express itself.
Lies dormant,
right. But you see, when a person gets involved, that's why the Mishnah Melech gives that muscle. Of course, in a love affair, you can really see where the, all of a sudden, the person is completely involved. His energies, his whole being changes. That energy was always there. But that energy ordinarily lies dormant because it has no outlet. See? But in the situation, that's similar later on, so in the situation of Alas Hashem, that energy all becomes alive. The exact same way. That's the way a person feels. Tell us, Avon.
Can I ask a question?
The question is like this. We say that there are two elements in the soul. There's the intellect, and then there's the emotions, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the first question that we have to ask is, which of these two elements is superior? That's the question. I mean, definitely, clearly, we see there are two elements, right? There's an element of emotion, and there's an element of intellect, right? Now, the question is, which of these two is superior? Right?
Yep.
Okay. What do we mean by superior? Right? Okay. Now, isn't it true that, would you say, for instance, that truth is a virtue? Or, if we take a, let's take a look at the two elements of the soul. Is it true that when we, that between these two elements, the emotions, right, is the element that misleads us? For instance, emotions could tell us that we feel that we are sick when we're healthy. Emotions could tell us that we're healthy when we're really sick, right? And the only way that we find out when we get into a quandary with the emotions is by going to a doctor and by utilizing the intellect to decide whether or not the person is ill or not. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
For instance, not only the emotions, but the senses also. If you take a look at tracks, train tracks in the distance, they look smaller in the distance than they do right up front, right? Isn't that so? Yeah. But, so if we follow our senses, we would say that the tracks get smaller as they go down, right? But what really tells us that this isn't so? That the tracks are really the same size, but they only appear to be different. The intellect. So the intellect investigates and sees the, checks it out, and finds that it must be a sphere, a contradiction, because you see over here, on the one hand, the tracks look big, right? On the other hand, the tracks over there look small, but when you get down there, they look big, right? So the intellect has a problem. The intellect says, it must be that they really are big, but the position is what causes it to appear that way. So really what solves the dilemma is the intellect, right? And after that, you don't follow your senses, even though they look smaller, but you still don't follow your senses. You say it must be due to distance. This is the deduction that we make. So the intellect really, so really the senses fool us, actually. Because if we go by the senses alone, you say they're smaller, right? But the intellect tells us that really isn't so, that the reason why it only appears to be smaller to the senses is because of another reason, right? So the intellect really is in line with the with reality, in line with the truth, right? So of the two elements, we notice that there is one element which teaches us the truth, and the other one, which in many instances teaches us falsehood. Now, of the two then, which must we say is the superior?
Insofar as
truth. Now, one, therefore, definitely you see that the emotions and the senses really teach us, not only when you say that they teach us falsehood, right? So that an element which teaches you falsehood certainly cannot be considered the superior element, right? Correct? Okay. Anybody have a question?
in man, within man, there are of these two elements, the one that is in line with reality and the one that was in line with the truth, that teaches the truth, that certainly is the element which is really on a which is really a higher element, a superior element, a higher element, right? Okay, that's one point. Of course, that doesn't show at this point that the essence of man is necessarily the higher element.
Right. Right.
Because his question was...
It's the lower element.
It's the lower element. Correct? That was his question. Right? Okay. In other words, it might very well be that man, even though he tries to be great, and he would like to be very high, on a very high level, but perhaps he really isn't. Unfortunately, he's rooted in this other element, which doesn't necessarily always tell him the truth, right? And it fools him, and it makes him make mistakes. But this is his essence, right? Okay. Then we have to ask one question. See? That's the case. We have to ask a question. We must say like this. You see? Definitely, man has emotions. There's no question about that. There's no one that denies that. Right? But we have to ask one question. See, the question is like this. What we're saying at this point is that if the emotions are the essence, then man will be in line with the lower element. But if the intellect is the essence, then man will be in line with his higher element. And he has shown a lot of arguments that tend to show us that really, which element is the essence? The emotional is the essence. So therefore, what his argument would tend to show us, that really man is in line with the lower element, right? Okay. Now I say that it's quite possible to say that both are true. Both are true. One question you have to ask. The question is this. Is there an enjoyment of knowledge? Is there such a thing in man as an enjoyment of knowledge? Is there such a thing?
Of knowledge?
Of knowledge.
What happens?
There's an enjoyment. Definitely there's an enjoyment of taiva. You don't have to elaborate on that. There's a certain enjoyment of taiva. And when a person enjoys taiva, which part of him enjoys the taiva? It's not the physical part of him that enjoys it. It's the emotional part, right? The taiva is a physical performance, but after the physical performance is done, it has to relay all the things that have been done have to relate to the inner emotions, and the inner emotions is what enjoys it, right? So definitely, the enjoyment of taiva is an emotional thing, correct? No question about it, right? Any enjoyment is an emotional thing. But is there in man an enjoyment of intellect? That's the question we're asking. Really, the truth of the matter is that man has within himself an enjoyment, has within himself a certain emotion with which he enjoys intellect. I mean, we're sitting here today, right? And last week, come here, we enjoy the argumentation, right? Like the Rambam says in the Sefer Mitzvah, what does he say? He says, "Achnasu v'nene basadasu v'tachlas hanor." It is Hanor, there's an enjoyment there, right? Okay. Now let me ask you a question. Isn't it true that in this life, we see the many, many different people? There are different enjoyments and there are different people in life, right? We see some people, for instance, enjoy sports. And they go into the area so much, to such an extent, that it occupies their whole life. And this becomes their main involvement. Therefore, the enjoyment, their emotions are always satisfied by sports. That's where their main emotions are. Different degrees. Some people totally involved, some people partially involved, right? Some people are involved in the world of taiva, and this is what gives them satisfaction. Again, you have various degrees. For some people, it's their whole life. Like a playboy, means... What? Physical desire. You know, like eating, women, drinking, this type of thing. You know, that type. So, lust, right. Like a playboy. Playboy, for instance, is the extreme. He represents the extreme. A person whose whole essence, his whole life, is this indulgence in taiva. And this is what gives him satisfaction. What? He enjoys involvement in the physical. And that's his essence. That's what makes him happy. Other things don't really affect him that much. See? So that there are, just like there are different enjoyments in life, you have different people that are involved in these different enjoyments, right? Okay. Similarly, there are people who are involved in the other enjoyment that we discussed, the enjoyment of knowledge and the enjoyment of reality. There's a certain enjoyment, right? A person perceives an idea, he has a certain enjoyment out of it, correct? Now again, there are different degrees. There are people that enjoy a thought, you'll notice that most people do enjoy some sort, like to show a person a puzzle. Anybody, practically anybody, show him a puzzle, and he's bothered, he's showing a solution. He says, well, yeah, that's pretty good. See? They have some enjoyment out of it. Waking a little spark of enjoyment, which means that the enjoyment is really there. But, of course, this person usually goes on his way and spends the rest of the day, whatever he's doing. But there are some people who have concentrated themselves so much on this enjoyment that this is really the essence of their life. Correct? Okay. Now, then the situation has to be like this. Therefore, we must have a person who's... Let's take the extreme, because from the extreme you can really see the idea clearly. If you're not dealing with the extremes, you can't see it clearly because the other things are taken away from the picture. You know what I mean? Okay. Let's take a person whose essential enjoyment, his only enjoyment, and all his energy is driven towards one enjoyment, and that's the enjoyment of knowledge and the enjoyment of truth. Right? Now, if a person enjoys truth, that's his real essential enjoyment. Correct? Okay. Then I would ask you a question. Is he in line with the higher principle in his soul, or is he in line with the lower? Because before we said, since there are two elements, and the higher element seems to teach us truth, and the lower element teaches us falsehoods, right? So we said either a person is essentially emotions, in which case he's in line with the lower element, or else he's essentially intellect, in which case he's in line with the higher element. But we argued, was argued, that it's not true, because a person essentially is emotion, right? And this argument was accepted, and basically I don't think anybody was able to show that that's not true. So therefore, my question is as follows. Now, let's say we have a person who is emotionally, his emotions are directed towards the enjoyment of truth. This is really what is emotion to enjoy. To an extreme, extreme degree. Let's just take the very extreme case. His emotions are directed towards the enjoyment of truth. This is really what is emotion to enjoy. To an extreme, extreme degree. Let's just take the very extreme case, so we can visualize it clearly. Will this person be in line with the higher element, or will he be in line with the lower element? He would have to be in line with the lower. Now, I said that the individual, right, who lives according to the lower one has to live in a world of falsehood, right?
Well, you're just living in a world of truth.
Exactly. Okay. So therefore, even though he is essentially emotion, but since his emotion is all directed towards the truth, that's where his emotion is directed towards, so therefore the man has to always live according to the higher element. Correct? Now, even though the prime mover of the soul is the emotion, that's true, but the emotion really wants what? What does the emotion desire? The emotion desires truth, isn't that correct? So therefore... What individual will live in accordance, will his life be in accordance with the principle which gives him truth? Or will his life be in accordance with the principle, what type of life? Will he have a life of truth or a life of falsehood? He definitely have a life of truth, correct? So therefore I say it is possible that both are correct. In other words, without rejecting the argument that was mentioned last week, namely that the emotion is the prime mover of a person, I say, yes, that is true, that the emotion is the prime mover of a person. But then, if the emotion is attached to other areas which are not areas of truth, then definitely the man has to live a life of falsehood. But if the emotion is attached to the knowledge of truth, then definitely the man has to be in line and has to live according to truth. In which case, no emotion will ever, because the argument was like this, the argument was, a person can't really do a person can't really live according to reason. So I remember, this is the argument. Why? Because when a person lives according, a person likes to live according to reason, but the emotions shade the intellect, right? Now, would it be possible for the emotions to shade the intellect in this situation? Definitely. Really the essential, what do the emotions want? The truth. So therefore, on the contrary, all the emotions will be driving him for the truth. You follow? So in this case, the emotions would never be able to shade the intellect, because the emotions are directly for the intellect itself. Correct? Okay. Will never cloud the intellect. So that was the question.
Rick? Okay. He's, that's what I want to say one thing. That it's true that a person has emotions, but there are two different types of lives that you have because of emotions. There is a life in which the emotions are involved in other areas, not after truth. The emotions are searching after different things. Whenever the emotions are searching after different things, then definitely the person could never come to a really true conclusion. In most cases. Why? Because since the emotions want something and the intellect's telling something else, so he's in conflict. He wants this, the intellect says that, he's going to try to work his way out of it. Try to bend reality a little bit for himself. But if all the emotions want is the accurate perception of reality, then it's impossible for the emotions to bend reality because that's what the emotions want. You see? Now, of course, the only problem is like this. And this is a problem which is not a logical one, but it's one which is due to our state. See, in our society, we don't really notice too many people that live with this enjoyment of perceiving the truth and perceiving reality. So we tend to assume and to generalize and to base our psychology on what we've observed in people. But in truth, that really might be a very bad practice. Because, for instance, if you're living in a certain society, and the society is really an inferior one, and then you set up your psychology based on what you see, that could be a very terrible move. Because by doing this, you might be preventing yourself from really seeing a greater type of human being. But due to the fact that you're rooted in society, you see, that's why you do it. And most people do function that way. I was, to generalize about people. Well, people do this and people do that. What they should say is the people that I've seen do this and that. But if we could be transplanted into another society, perhaps some of those rules that we maintain so steadfastly, we would discover that it aren't true. Now, if we take a look at the society of the individual that is being presented by the Rambam, and by the way, the Rambam even says that even in his time, such an individual was a rarity. He says in any other area. But nevertheless, it shouldn't prevent us from perceiving the idea, even if we are far away from that. There's another thing also. A lot of times we don't like to contemplate perfection, which is really far from us, because it's a natural tendency in man to want to feel that he's on a very high level. So if you see an individual and you understand him as being perfect, and he's so far away from our lives, so therefore many times we want to deny that this is perfection. But the truth of the matter is that is wrong. Because even though we aren't on that level, a person, we stand to gain by seeing what the epitome is. Because by knowledge of the epitome, that itself gives a person direction. And even though he might be far from that perfect model, but still, the eye of the mind is turned somewhat towards it. And it helps him to move in that direction. Okay?
What gives a person that chance?
To see Plato, to understand such an individual, in spite of our own shortcomings, and in spite of the society that we live in. Right? Now, therefore, it turns out that there is one situation, only one type of human being, in whom we could say that reason really reigns supreme. Reason reigns supreme, of course, not because of reason, not because of the faculty of reason itself, but because the emotion is attached to only one thing, the enjoyment of knowledge of the truth. That is the essence. Nothing else is important. Okay? That's why the Rambam says, now that you can understand the Rambam a little better, the Rambam says, that Avas Hashem, the love of God, is tied in with the love of knowledge. Because knowledge is, God is the source of knowledge. You see? Now, therefore, the Rambam says that this love of God is only that insofar as the emotion is attracted to knowledge. You see? Right. So, therefore, that's the Avas Hashem. It's the enjoyment of knowledge itself, you see? Now, therefore, he says it's impossible to have a person who has more enjoyment of knowledge and less knowledge. That would be impossible. Because that would mean he has an Avas Hashem. But this Avas Hashem obviously is not based on knowledge because he doesn't have the knowledge, you see? So, therefore, the love of God will only increase in direct ratio, in direct proportion to the knowledge. Because that is exactly the love of God is based upon the love of the perception of the Chachma of God, right? Now, insofar as can a person who is devoid of knowledge have a love of knowledge? Obviously, he has nothing to do with the knowledge. So, therefore,
As the knowledge increases, so does the love increase. Because since there is a love of knowledge, the more knowledge, the more there is to enjoy. But it's a direct ratio. It can't be, yes. It is a truism. It is that most people maintain, and that's why most people do not accept, really, the Rambam Shita. Because they maintain, they say, well, just a moment. If you're going to tell me that perfection is involved with knowledge, we find so many brilliant people, so many geniuses. The world, people of the world that consider geniuses, and we find that they're atheistic, right?
Yep.
So where is the, we don't see this ratio being set up according to the Rambam's ratio. That's a good question. Okay.
Yeah?
Oh, do not believe in God. They're agnostic. I wouldn't say atheistic, but agnostic. Okay. What is the answer?
We have to deal with two things over here. See, in a human being, there is two things. There is the quality of the intellect. That's one thing, right? And then there is the use of the intellect. All right?
Everybody's familiar with the cases where you might have a person who has a brilliant mind and doesn't use it, right? But not only are there cases like that, there are cases where people have brilliant minds and they can only use it in certain areas. Like there are people who could utilize their intellect in math. But when it comes to other areas, they seem devoid of knowledge. You have people who could utilize their intellect in law, but they might not be able to utilize it in other areas. Might have a mental block when it comes to math. Now, the thing is this. That insofar as there are two things. One is the quality of the intellect. That's one. The second thing that you have is how the individual utilizes that faculty. Right? And many times you can have a brilliant person could be fooled. Why could a brilliant person be fooled? Because what they do is, he is brilliant. Brilliant means he has a great mind. Like a tremendous flashlight beam. But if you can prevent that beam from facing the right direction, it has no value. Same thing with the intellect. The intellect, a person might have a great intellect, but if you could do something to prevent them from utilizing this intellect, then he's helpless. Now, there are certain ways, certain tricks that can be used, which prevent the person from utilizing his intellect properly. That's why one time I think they had a convention of scientists and some magicians showed them tricks, and the top-notch scientists, they couldn't figure it out. Couldn't work it out. Because, not because they were stupid, they were very, very brilliant. But the magician has a way of diverting the intellect so that the intellect can't forget to look in certain places. Yeah, you see? And since the intellect doesn't work in that area, so it's helpless. Right. And I say it like this. Now, when we speak about the epitome of man, we're speaking about a person who can utilize his intellect thoroughly. Has no barriers. There are no barriers. And what the Rambam maintains is, this is a basic principle of philosophy, which is different than most people who understand it. But nevertheless, this is what the Rambam Shita is. Rambam Shita is like this. That if a person really were free of all barriers, see, all barriers that prevent them from utilizing the reason, then he would definitely come to a recognition of God. However, not everyone is totally free of the emotion. So, and the emotion will prevent them. One second. It depends. If all the person desires is truth, then definitely he will have to come to the recognition of God. However, this is not always the case. A person might not be totally free, so that a person might not be able to utilize his intellect, you see? His emotion is not necessarily tied to the intellect in every instance. You follow? Now, if the emotion has other ties, then definitely he will not be able to think freely in this area. Now, there's one thing. When you have a person who has a very great mind, he impresses people. And people tend to assume that since he has such a great mind, every area that he discusses, he knows he's knowledgeable in. This is a total error. Because he is only great insofar as he can utilize this intellect. But in an area where he is stunted and he can't utilize the intellect, then his greatness ceases.
Now, an individual who might be a brilliant mathematician, brilliant physicist, if he has some hang-ups, some religious hang-ups, then in that area he will not be able to think freely. So that all his brilliance in math and physics will be worthless when it comes to this area. And we cannot accept his conclusions in that area because he can't think properly. Now, the problem with, for instance, you mentioned Bertrand Russell. Now, Bertrand Russell, just because he's a great physicist and mathematician, does not necessarily, he's brilliant, true, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he was able to utilize his intellect freely in the areas of religion. Those areas are very difficult areas to function in, the areas of philosophy, because most people have hang-ups, and these hang-ups are very subtle. They might be subtle enough to slip by an average individual, but nevertheless, people have hang-ups, and these hang-ups are very subtle. They might be subtle enough to slip by an average individual. But nevertheless, the people will maintain, of course, his conclusions are great because they don't see the subtle errors. But nevertheless, he really hasn't utilized his intellect fully in that area. What Yahadis maintains is, according to the Rambam's concept of Rambam's philosophy, that if a person was totally free, and that's why the Rambam says that in order for a person to go into metaphysics, he has to be able to be free of all emotions that are liable to pull him in the wrong direction. You see? Then he can really entertain the philosophical concepts objectively. But if he can't do this, then he's doomed to error. And Yadis maintains that no matter how brilliant an individual might be, he might be very brilliant, but in this area his brilliance wasn't really used. So that people who are great geniuses and are agnostic, it shows one thing, that their genius, they were unable to use their genius in this area because of certain emotional hang-ups. That the brilliance in this area was really Bertrand Russell is definitely a case like that. I'll show you several instances in which he and if you really analyze what he says in many instances, you'll see that there is an emotional negation of God. And his concept of God is most of his arguments are based upon a Christian concept of God, which is like a projected father, good father, or something like that. But he had no shaykhus for the concept of God that Yahadis has. And the reason why he didn't, some of the things he asked on the question, it's hard to believe that he couldn't really see through them. It will throw an average individual. But some of the questions, if you really look into it, you can't believe that it really stopped at that point, which is such a basic point, certain questions that stopped in regard to philosophy of God. But if you understand the way in the back of his mind, the type of God that he was taught from youth, that type of God, his question makes sense for. But he missed the whole point in regard to the God of Yahadis. That was because of his own hang-up. But therefore, you cannot bring any proof from the person who is intelligent and is an agnostic. He might be intelligent, but the Rambam is talking about more than intelligence. Intelligence is a tool, a factor. But we're talking about an individual who's all his energies are directed towards this, to the desire to know the truth, not towards certain conclusions which he wants to prove because he feels more comfortable with them. That's already a different thing. That's the biggest danger. The biggest danger is where a person he feels comfortable with certain conclusions. So therefore, we want certain things to be a certain way. So therefore, the intellect looks for this thing. But a person who's really after the truth doesn't care. There's no such thing as a painful conclusion. The only conclusion he wants is the reality. That's all he wants to know.
If we say that,
attached to the intellect.
All right, well, we can't.
Then he would be
totally without emotion.
No, that can't be. That's impossible. As a matter of fact, the state that the Rambam describes as cholas ava, that's an emotional state. There's no question about it. But it's an emotional state where all the emotions are directed towards the intellect.
Before I mention that,
I want you to know one thing. That in terms of, you see, in our society, the most destructive forces, the fact that our society, whatever enjoyment the person has or had of chokhmah, of knowledge, it usually has been removed from him by the time he reaches third or fourth grade, I'd say. True. trains a person specifically to come to the conclusion that knowledge and learning is a painful experience. See? And that's one thing a person gains out of school. When he leaves school, he knows that fact. He's learned that. And knowledge is pain.
He learned it well.
A normal child, an average child, really has an appreciation of chokhmah. really does. But instead of taking this appreciation and nurturing it and catering to it, developing it, what they do is they stifle it and they put chains on it, and they because they don't really what they and the reason is very simple. Is they, because they feel that school is supposed to be. I was just speaking to a principal of a school. I don't want to mention what school it was. A principal of a school who told me that all the children are very nervous when they go to school. It's a natural thing. They're very nervous because they're afraid, you know, they're tense, and this is good for them. It's to be under this tension and fear of tests, you know, and marks. See? Because they think that this is, they believe that they're really teaching a child to be able to withstand pain and to control themselves. As if the purpose of this life is to be trained for a very painful existence and withstand pain. That's the essence of life. So rather than taking this enjoyment that a child has of thought and understanding and developing it, they stifle it and they destroy it. To the point that we have all suffered from it to a tremendous degree, and there's nothing we can do about it, unfortunately, now. Of course, you can backtrack to a degree, but you can never remove it totally. I don't think it's possible to remove it really completely. That's what people fail to be able to recognize, that there is even such a type of a life. But this approach to religion, our approach to religion, the Yahadis approach to religion, is totally to be differentiated from any other religion. Because in any other religion, it is the emotion per se. A certain religious emotion per se. But Yahadis maintains it's the emotion which is attracted to Chachma, to truth. That's why if you look through, if you take a look at the Torah, and you take a look in Tanakh, and in Mishle, and in Keheles, always Chachma, 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 always counts on Chachma. Why? Because that's the essence of Yahadis. Yahadis is the only religion which is based on reality. It's based on reality. The person has a natural desire and love of the truth of MS, then naturally you have to become a religious Jew. He has no choice. That's what it is.
Really,
this would not be the case. This would definitely not be the case in the good society. Yes. You do find such individuals. I've mentioned several times that Einstein, it seems, from whatever I've read about him, was such an individual, or such a person. He was a person who just enjoyed the Chochmah per se. That was it. Money didn't mean anything to him. Nothing else meant anything to him. The only thing he enjoyed, the only thing he really loved, was just the knowledge. And this was his whole life. As a person like Einstein. Just going by the biographies I read. I appreciate knowledge. There's no question about it. He appreciates no knowledge. But I would not say that his appreciation of the same category as Einstein. I'm just giving you an example. I would not blame him for that. Because most people do not have an accurate knowledge. Yeah, this isn't a simple religion. Other religions, a person, Christianity spread across the globe quite rapidly. And in several weeks, countries were overtaken by Christianity. Because it doesn't take long to really know what it is. But Yahadis takes a little longer than that. Yahadis, to know what Yahadis is takes years. And it takes a tremendous amount of Chochmah. The Rambam says when you're Mekabel a Ger, he's telling you, have a Rambam Hilchos, you have a Mekabel a Ger. The Rambam says, you tell the Ger. Perek Yudalit. He said like this. He says he explained to him, of course, Kabbalah's mitzvah is an essential part of Gerist. So you have to explain to him what it is. You can't give him a regalachas. They have to give him, then you can't make him wait too long either. You can't make a person wait till become a Ger, wait till he's a big Talmud Chacham. It's impossible. Okay. So the Rambam says, My dinai say shebatzias mitzvahs elu yiske l'chayer el mabo. He says, and you tell him, V'she'ein shun tzadik gomor. There is no such thing. Ein shun tzadik gomor. There is no such thing as a tzadik gomor. Ela ba'al ha-chokhmah. A person who is a ba'al ha-chokhmah, who has knowledge. A person who has total knowledge. She'osa mitzvos elu, that does these mitzvos, the yod on, and knows them. Now this is a little bit deeper. It's not so quick.
So that's why, unfortunately, when a person like Sigmund Freud, when he criticizes Yahadis, he doesn't, unfortunately, didn't know what Yahadis was. See, his Yahadis, he created Yahadis, Einstein also, by the way. They thought of religion as one genus. You know, there's differences in it. Happens to be Christianity or Islam or these just particular. But basically, it's the same type of a life. This is a knowledgeable structure. This is really, actually, what is Yahadis? Yahadis is the science of life. Science of life. So what do you think? Rama says, Das. What does Rama call it? The Das Anda. Different type of religion. Question was, the term religion really you can't really use. It's the wrong term to use for Yahadis. Religion is the wrong term. You don't have to, whatever it is, even if you say intellect or if you say it's emotion, unfortunately people think that there's, that certain things, let me give you an example. In our society, you have to, in order to get a degree, you have to spend a certain amount of time going through certain courses, right, in college. Now most of the time, most of these courses, people know, it's a process of elimination. Like they have to eliminate certain individuals. So how do they do it? Not necessarily the most brilliant person is the one that can get into medical college. Many times, a person who is very brilliant can't get in because he can't do can't take the tediousness of the work. But they have to do this because it's an elimination process. Now, why do they base the elimination process on the tediousness? See, if a person can go through the grind, and many of these courses are nothing more than the grind, so why do they do it? Because they feel it wouldn't be fair if you would just say, well, he has 185 IQ, he can come in. The other one doesn't. They feel this isn't fair, because here you're dealing with an inborn characteristic, and you're saying, well, you were born this way, so you can become a doctor. You are, you can. But this way, they feel it's more fair. Why? Because anybody could work. And therefore, if you didn't work for it, you didn't get it. So this is considered by society to be more democratic. The truth of the matter is, what? Right. But the truth of the matter is that isn't true. Why? Because just like intellect is an inborn thing, certain abilities are also inborn. And while it is true that we can develop them to a certain degree, you see, there are certain people that can't. And that's a fact. Certain people that can't do it. A person who just cannot sit down more than 2 hours at a shot. Can't do it. Okay. So really, it's not any more fair. But I will say this. That insofar as this is concerned, no matter what you are going to have, let's say we say, for instance, intellect is a factor in the knowledge of God, and obviously Hashem certainly can't deny. Now, a person who has an inferior intellect will certainly never be able to really reach the level of Allah Hashem that the Rambam reached, which is Alpia Deatia Aval, right? So you'll say it's unfair. But simultaneously, if you'll tell me it's a certain emotion, it's also unfair. For certain people can involve themselves in certain emotions more freely than others. So the truth of the matter is that any situation that you're going to create, whatever your criteria are going to be, it's still going to be unfair. See, just because they're emotional criteria doesn't mean it's fair. If you take a look at a person and say, well, anybody can do this, that's not necessarily true. Anybody can't do this. You know, in Christianity, they have these Trappist monks where they go for days, months. They don't talk, they don't eat, all these ridiculous type of suffering. Yeah, but the point is not everybody can do that. Certain people can do that. Some people can take punishment. They can take pain. Not everybody can do it. That doesn't mean it's more fair. Just because you think you could do it doesn't mean you really can do it. So the point is like this. And so for whatever your criteria are, you're always going to have a situation where it's not fair. But the answer to that question is, and I think I mentioned a few times, that fairness is a mistaken notion on the part of man. See, what is fairness? Fairness is where you compare yourself with somebody else and you say, why can't I be like him? Or why am I not like him? The comparison is a mistake. That's Lo Sachmos. What is Lo Sachmos? Lo Sachmos means that I shouldn't have a desire for, I shouldn't covet my neighbor. My neighbor has, I shouldn't want. What do you mean I shouldn't want? What do you mean I shouldn't want it? I see he has a nicer car than me. It bothers me. I want it.
Right.
Why? The answer is that a person who has real knowledge of God knows that his reality is the only reality that should concern him. Okay? If there are superior beings, this doesn't mean it's not fair. God can create any type of thing he wants. There are angels that are superior to us. So what? Are we going to think about that? That's ridiculous. Now, therefore, there are creatures that are inferior to us. There's an ox that doesn't have any intellect. So say it's not fair that God created an ox? That's absurd.
God is a being that creates, and he can create whatever he wishes. Now, that's the same assumption that we should have in relation to ourselves, that each one of us is a creature. If the other person who is superior to us never existed, or if he does exist, should make no difference. Because the fact has nothing to do with me. I mean, God created me as an individual, and he endowed me with certain potential, and the only thing I can do is to utilize that potential to the greatest degree. If there are superior beings, so that has nothing to do with me. God can create certainly a more superior being than any one of us. That's right. The other person's reality, the comparison is the mistake. That's the mistake. It's a human error, the comparison. That's the mistake. So when you say in terms of Bechira is an individual thing, really. But to say that a person has the Bechira, to think that any one of us will be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, would really be a little bit absurd. You see, as great as the Rambam would be absurd. Because we don't have that potential. But God saw fit to create a Rambam. And he saw fit to create us. Each one of us has to operate within his own frame. But the comparison is a mistake. The fairness, that idea of fairness is a mistaken notion. All he asked is not that easy to answer as this one. Second question was in relationship to Olam Haba, if I remember correctly, right? Okay. Now, relationship to Olam Haba, it gets a bit complicated. I'll just outline. I mean, Olam Haba, I want you to know, the study of Olam Haba is a very abstract area. The Rambam and the Mordechai and the Wolfen have mentioned many times that a lot of people made mistakes in this area. It's very abstract, and we don't really fully comprehend Olam Haba. The Pasuk says that we don't comprehend it, because the Pasuk says that we mercy Mashiach, the Gemara says. But Olam Haba, Ayin LeRasa Alekim Zulasecha. Ayin LeRasa. So Olam Haba, nobody saw. Even the Nevi'im didn't really understand what Olam Haba is. Now, so therefore, you know that the year is a very difficult one. But just let me just give you a basic guideline as to what happens. Ram says like this, that it is true that in this world the emotions are the prime mover of an individual. Therefore, if you wish to define the soul, you say, what is the soul of man, or what does the word soul really mean? The word soul should mean his essence, prime mover, right? A prime mover. In that case, you have to say the prime mover is the emotion. You have to say that. Because whatever a person does will necessarily be caused by the emotion. So an individual, you have to say the prime mover is the emotion, so therefore the soul should be defined as the prime mover, so therefore that's the emotion, right? But, however, the Rambam says like this. The intellect which the emotion utilizes in this world, the Rambam says, that is the only part which remains after death. So that it turns out like this, that while in this world, that which causes the intellect to operate is certainly the emotion, that does not necessarily mean that in a succeeding existence this has to be so. The Rambam says that after death, there is something else. The prime mover is not the emotion anymore. But there is something else which is related to the intellect. And there is another type of enjoyment that is perceived from the intellect that we do not perceive in any way in this world. You see? So that if you ask me what is the essence of man, then we would have to say the essence of man is more closely related to the intellect. Because if you're speaking of the essence as we see and hear today, then you're right. You'd have to say the prime mover is the emotion. But if you're speaking of the essence in terms of his eternal existence, and that this existence is just a period transition, there's a period of transition which he goes through afterwards, after he dies, and the transition is from the prime mover being converted from the emotion to something else. What it is exactly, we don't know. And a different type of enjoyment, which we cannot perceive in any way in this world, Rambam says.
Yeah.
Rambam says there's no such thing as a ruchnius dikke enjoyment in this world, Rambam says. People always say, well, let's really have a real ruchnius dikke enjoyment. Rambam says, there is no such thing. You can't have it. Because any enjoyment in this world, he says, is based on physical emotion. He says the only enjoyment is in the world to come, in the next world. As a matter of fact,
We don't have a hint of it. That's right. The Rambam says, just like a blind man can't perceive what color is, he says, that's how we can't perceive what that enjoyment is. So it's a different thing altogether. And in that existence, the prime mover is not anymore the emotion, but the prime mover is something else. And the enjoyment is of a different nature. He says, not even a Navi knew what it was. That's what the Rambam says. So therefore, in terms of this world, definitely the prime mover is the emotion. There's no question about it. So if you look at man in terms of his totality, you have to say that his essence is more related to his intellect. Yeah.